who had lost his bodily luster. Stira Pragyan, who was all but the same, who was all the same determined in his decision. Udara Vyasasam, the most magnanimous and celebrated. Nripa, O King. Translation. O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, then spoke to Bali Maharaj, the most liberal and celebrated personality, whom he had arrested with the ropes of Runa. Bali Maharaj had lost all bodily luster, but he was nonetheless fixed in his determination. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When one is bereft of all his possessions, he is certainly reduced in bodily luster. But although Bali Maharaj had lost everything, he was fixed in his determination to satisfy Vamanadeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, such a person is called Stita Pragya. A pure devotee is never deviated from the service of the Lord, despite all difficulties and impediments offered by the illusory energy. Generally, men who have wealth and opulence are famous, but Bali Maharaj became famous for all time by being deprived of all his possessions. And this is a special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead toward his devotees. And the Lord says, Yasyaham anugrahami harishye tad dhanam shanai. As the first installment of his special favor, the Lord takes away all of the possessions of his devotee. A devotee, however, is never disturbed by such a loss. He continues his service, and the Lord amply rewards him beyond the expectations of any common man. Om Gyan Timurandasya Kinanjana Shlokaya Chakshun Militamiya Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinanami Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachayane Nirvasesha Shunivadi Pastata Vishtami Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyavicha Ptitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Babunityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Lapcha for me is the most intimidating place to give class because there's such a high percentage of senior people. So I ask for your blessings that I might be able to say something worthwhile. And this is a certainly a very amazing test that Bali Maharaj is undergoing at this point. The previous verse talked about how there's a great roar of lamentation in all directions, the upper and lower planetary systems, when Bali Maharaj was arrested. So this is a very curious situation because basically Bali Maharaj, he just promised to give 3 steps of land, which one would think that somebody who owned the entire universe would be able to do. But the Lord, in just 2 steps, he covered the whole universe. Therefore, although in fact Bali Maharaj had given him everything, still he had not kept his promise. And therefore, Varuna thought he was punishable. So, although the people of the world thought he'd done very well by giving so much to the Lord, he actually gave the whole universe back to the Lord. Therefore, they were thinking that it might be unjust that this person who'd given everything he possibly had to the Lord would be punished, and they were lamenting. Still, the Lord continued to tie him up and punish him. So, Prabhupada glorifies Bali Maharaj here for not being disturbed at all. An ordinary person, if you've given everything, if you've given everything you have, and then you're still punished for not giving enough, I mean, that's heavy. You know? There's like a phrase, adding insult to injury like that. You've already given everything you have, and then on top of that, you're being punished for not giving enough. And so an ordinary person would be a little bit annoyed about being treated in that way. But Bali Maharshi was not an ordinary person. One thing, he was coming in a very special dynasty. Bali Maharaj, his grandfather was Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj is one of the most celebrated devotees that we glorify regularly. Actually, Srila Prabhupada gave many, many lectures on the seventh canto, the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj. And Lord Chaitanya himself, he would always hear the Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. And his favorite sections were Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. And he would have Gadadhar Pandit read them 100 times before going on to another section, because he liked to relish them so much. So Prahlad Maharaj is a most amazing devotee. And Bali Maharaj is his grandson. And Prabhupada talks about how the grandfather is more generous and favorable than the father. So here the kind grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, has undoubtedly given Bali Maharaj a lot of blessings. So he was, although born in the family of demons, he was a very incredibly advanced Vaishnava, so much so that when his own guru told him not to surrender to the Lord, he said, what need do I have for this guru? I'm going to surrender everything to the Lord anyway. So he was a very incredible personality. So Prabhupada glorifies his determination. There's this word here, stira pragyam, talking about how determined he was, which is related to stita pragya, which means fixed in transcendental consciousness, which is talked a lot about in Bhagavad Gita. Actually, that word comes up in many, many almost consecutive verses in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, beginning with 254. Arjuna Vacha, Stita Pragyasya Kabasa. So Arjuna is asking Krishna, what is the language of this person who's fixed in consciousness? Samadhi Stasya Keshava, Stita Dikim Prapasaita. How does he speak? Kimasita. How does he sit? Vrajeta Kim. How does he walk? Which is very curious, because although he asks these specific questions of Krishna, Krishna doesn't say anything about how he speaks, what is his language, how he sits, or how he walks. But he talks about how his internal consciousness is. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Sara Partamanogatan, Atmanyev Atmanatrishta, Stida Pragyastarochati. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire born of sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So this pure consciousness, it means one's completely satisfied to be engaged on the spiritual plane and doesn't dream about any varieties of sense gratification. Oh, I could enjoy this way, or I could enjoy that way. All that is history. He's just involved in his transcendental pursuit. And then that comes up again, this Pragya Pratishtita is in 57. In this material world, one who's unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So this is perfectly true of Bali Maharaj. He was unaffected by what good or evil he may obtain. He'd given everything in charity, but he was still punished for not giving them enough, which most people would consider a great insult. But he wasn't disturbed at all. He was understanding, Lord Vamanadeva is my Lord. Whatever he wants to do is fine with me. My job is just to please him somehow or other. And then the next verse continues, Yida samarati chayam kurmang angiva sarvasa indriyan indriyartebhyas tasya pragya pratishtita. Also, pragya pratishtita. Shtita and pratishtita are similar words meaning fixed. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise withdraws his limbs into the shell, is thus firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. And there's one more, I believe, 61. Tanisarani samyamya yukta asita matpara vashehi yasindriyani tasya pragyapratishtita. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness on me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So he wasn't protesting. He was accepting what Lord Vamanadeva was going to do with him. And also, that sort of mentality reminds me of the last verse of the Shikshastaka, really, which where the devotee says, "You may handle me roughly by your embrace. You may make me broken-hearted by not being present before you. Still, you're my Lord unconditionally." So this was Baldi Maharaj's amazing mood. And then, in commenting on this, Srila Prabhupada analyzes that this taking away everything from Baldi Maharaj is actually a special mercy. And he quotes a verse that he very dearly loved, the Yasya Ham Anugrahami verse, Harishe Tab Danam Shanai, which he found to be applicable in his own life when his business failed at one point and he lost practically everything. His whole program of trying to please his Guru Maharaj was, Prabhupada originally thought he would have a thriving business that made a lot of money and use the money to support the preaching of his Guru's mission. That was his plan, but that wasn't the Lord's plan. So his business, although he put so much, Prabhupada was such an intelligent person, with all his intelligence he created a business that was had the potential to do really well, but somehow or other, by intrigue, the whole thing fell apart. So Srila Prabhupada, he took, in consultation with his godbrothers, he took shelter of this verse, considering that this was the Lord's favor upon him, that he suffered this reverse. And although that at that time it wasn't clear how it was the Lord's favor upon him, later on it did become clear, because he could stop focusing on his family, take vanaprastha, and ultimately sannyas. And ultimately, he had a much, even materially speaking, he ended up far, in a far superior situation. He ended up having, instead of a few offices of a business in India, he had 100 temples all over the world. Instead of having a few employees that he had to pay a few rupees to do some things for him, he had like thousands of people volunteering to give their whole life to him. And so by material calculation, he came out incredibly successful. And by spiritual calculation, he pleased his spiritual master in a big way, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Not only did he please his spiritual master, but he gave thousands and ultimately millions of people the chance, probably even billions of people the chance to come into the pure, in touch with the pure message of Krishna, and become liberated from material life and have the chance to develop their love for God. So it was. He also, there was one time he was talking about how when he took sannyas, that he gave up his whole family life. He said that he had three children, so he gave up his three children, but now as a preacher of Krishna consciousness, he had 300 children. At that time, there was 300 devotees. So he had three children who more or less were not interested in helping him very much with his mission, and he gained 300 children who were willing to work 24 hours a day to help him share Krishna consciousness with the world. So although by material calculation, it appears that the devotee loses everything or loses what he has or loses a whole lot, by the grace of the Lord, he actually comes out ahead. So this complete self-surrender is what Baldi Maharaj is glorified for. There's 9 different items of devotional service in the self-surrender. Surrendering oneself, surrendering everything, is the 9th of the 9. And so, one might ask, are we expected to become like Bali Maharaj? Is he some person that we're supposed to practically emulate? So, one could answer that question yes, or one could answer that question no. If one was going to answer that question yes, one could quote Bhagavad Gita 18:66, where Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Just surrender. Surrender everything. All conceptions, sarvadhamma, just surrender to me. I will protect you. Do not fear. But there's another place where it's not really recommended that your average devotee actually try to surrender everything, which I happened to encounter in our class in Gainesville on Nectar of Devotion last night. Because Rupa Goswami talks about these, he talks about friendship and surrendering everything, which are the two final of the 9. The 8th is friendship and the 9th is surrendering everything. Srila Rupa Goswami says that devotional service in friendship and devotional service in self-surrender are 2 difficult processes. Therefore, such relationships with the Lord can very rarely be seen. Only for the advanced devotees are these 2 processes easily executed. The purport is that it is very rare to see surrender which is mixed with sincere ecstatic devotion. One must give himself completely to the will of the Lord. So I found it interesting in my reading of Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion and his purports to the Chaitanya Charitamrita that in a couple of different places regarding these 9 items of devotion, Prabhupada advises that we should choose at least one of these 9 that we can actually completely devote our whole attention to. We should absorb ourselves in hearing about the Lord, or chanting about the Lord, or remembering the Lord, or worshiping the Lord. Last week on Saturday, all the devotees from our Gainesville temple, we came to Chaturatma's place to hear from him about deity worship. You know? And Chaturatma can talk about deity worship for a long time, and he can show you lots of deities. I mean, you have at least 60 or 70 Shilas there, including 3 that came from Narottam Das Thakur, and a few that came from the 55th Street temple. And so for me, you know, that's a completely awesome thing to be so much dedicated to deity worship as he is. But that's an example of somebody being enthusiastic about one particular service. But there's 9 of them. There's offering prayers. There's serving the lotus feet of the Lord. There's carrying out the order of the Lord. There's 9 different items. And Prabhupada recommends that each of us has a natural proclivity for one of them. It's not artificial. We don't have to. Whichever the 9 is the easiest to do, we should try and come to the point of being able to absorb our mind in it. Because the attainment of the spiritual world happens when when we don't have any material desires anymore. We're completely satisfied serving Krishna in some way or another. So the idea is that by cultivating an attachment to one of these 9, we can become so absorbed in it that we can actually forget our material existence. One time I was fasting, I think it was on Janmashtami, and I was working on my journal about the different spiritual places I went to and activities I was involved in, and I was answering questions for Krishna.com and doing the computer related work that had a devotional component. And I was like, 6 hours went by, and I was thinking, well, this is really amazing, because usually when you're fasting you usually think about eating at least once or twice within 6 hours, you know, something that's on your mind, you know. And I could see, like, being absorbed in writing and answering questions and stuff, but somehow or other I wasn't focused on the usual problem of worrying about how many more hours left in the fast or whatever. And we see that on the festival days, whenever there's a festival, when we get really absorbed in, like, decorating for the festival or preparing the feast for the festival, that we can actually experience that we become detached from our material situation and absorbed in Krishna. And we get, basically, we're given a little taste of what, like, you know, complete, pure devotional service is on those days when we just, the only thing we do, everything we do has some, you know, direct relationship to Krishna. So, those are a few thoughts about Bali's amazing surrender and how we can practically benefit by it. Of course, another way is whatever our devotional service is, we can be fixed in that. We can be sthita pragya as far as whatever our particular duty the Lord has given us, whatever our service is, we can do that service without deviation as an offering to the Lord. So does anybody have any questions or comments or realizations about, yes, when you approve?
One was, it said that the throughout the universe there was this big cry, maybe shock or something, when he surrendered everything, and I'm trying to understand, was everybody upset, disturbed, or they were happy, or
I wouldn't say they're happy, because lamentation is not really associated with happiness. Although crying can be a cry, there's cries of joy and cries of lamentation, but the word lamentation was specifically used. And this, what had just happened in the previous verse was, the previous verse 26, which presumably you read yesterday, was that Bali Maharaj was arrested with the ropes of Varuna. And then it says, when Bali Maharaj was thus arrested by Lord Vishnu, who is most powerful, there's a great roar of lamentation. So my intuition would be is that people thought that it was a little bit too much after Bali had given everything, on top of that, the Lord Vishnu was arresting him. You know, they're feeling sorry for Bali. I mean, after he'd given everything in charity, now he was like being arrested. So, does anybody else have any insights into that? That's the best I could do with it.
So the other question was, said Bali Maharaj lost his bodily luster, bodily color, and I guess my impression would have been like, you know, when one surrenders completely unto the Lord, he should be relieved and bright-faced. And
right. Well, there's that verse that said that, you know, one can't understand the mind of the Vaishnava. So even a highly learned person cannot understand the mind of the Vaishnava. So although he was appearing like he lost his luster, internally he hadn't deviated from his determination to serve the Lord. Just because I guess the devotees appears in a lamentable position or doesn't mean that he's lost a lamentation, right? But internally, if one's actually thinking about Krishna, then he's actually in a transcendental state beyond the happiness and distress of this world. So I would say the loss of luster was a like material reaction, and Bali Maharaj, because he was transcendentally situated, he wasn't concerned about the loss of the whole, you know, universe, nor was he concerned about being punished, nor was he concerned about losing his body luster as a reaction to disobeying his guru or not fulfilling his promise or whatever the heck it was it was a reaction to. So I would say that was like a material reaction happening in his body, but not something that he was identifying with, and not something that which affected his consciousness, as Prabhupada is describing. Yes.
I don't know who was there, but I was there when Prabhupada came back from Rishikesh and what was London. You know, he hadn't been, you know, in the back gate by the entrance to Krishna Balaram guest house, and he was emaciated, you know, he was more emaciated than he'd been. And everybody was like shocked. So I was thinking like similar thing. Mm-hmm. He was so emaciated. He'd been emaciated and he got more emaciated. It was just like skin and bone. And everyone, when he came out of the car, everyone was like gasping. So I can imagine, I don't know, the whole universe could see Bali.
Right.
But we could see Prabhupada, and he definitely looked drastically different. I don't know if Bali looked that bad, but Prabhupada looked really, I mean, it looked like, how could anyone live and look like that? You know, but it probably kept going after that also for, I think, several months.
Mm.
But it was real shocking to see him come out of the car and it was just like grave, and you know, it's pretty heavy to see him like that. But nobody could argue and say, no, he still looks the same.
Mm.
He didn't look the same.
Right. But his consciousness was still the same.
Yeah, you could see he was completely transcendental to his body. He would always say, you know, I'm not this body. He's looking at me, you know, we're all, you know, anytime I may go. And then we saw that, it was pretty heavy. So, you know, he was like 60, 70 pounds. I don't know.
Wow.
It was like, I don't even know what he weighed.
What month was that when he came back?
What month?
Yeah. It was 77.
We just saw that on the, well, I didn't see that part, but when he went to Rishikesh and came back and,
like the end of the summer, was it like August or something?
Yeah, I forgot the exact date, but we just saw it on Sunday on the videos. Even though I was there, it was kind of shocking. So you kind of baffled it out of your head a little bit, blocked it out. It's boggling, mind-boggling. There was a time when they came with these rickshaws with big bags on it, and I can't remember who I asked up. I was looking from the window in the guest house in Krishna Balaram. I said, what are those bags on the rickshaw, you know? And someone said, oh, that's salt for the samadhi. And they were like already laying out the samadhi in front. The powder was still there in his body. So it was like,
wow, that's doing heavy.
It was something, you know, shocking.
When I was traveling recently, I can't remember, I've been in so many places, but I put it in my journal because it was very impressive to me that I think it was the very tail end of Prabhupada's life. They're organizing that Life Comes From Life conference, you know, and he was going over the details with one of his senior disciples, and Prabhupada was concerned about the accommodations for the scientists, that they would be comfortably situated, you know? And his body was like in the epitome of like discomfort, and he was practically on the verge of leaving his body, but he was so detached, he wasn't worried about his own suffering, but he was worrying about, would these scientists be comfortable, you know, which is like inconceivable, you know, when you're like in an incredibly miserable situation, you don't think about the comfort of other people, you know, you're just so overwhelmed with an ordinary person with their own discomfort, but he was concerned about whether these scientists would be comfortable in that state of life. You had a question?
Yeah, I was thinking just
just on the point of Bali losing his bodily luster, you know, he probably was thinking the Lord would take away his wealth or whatever, but he wasn't ready to what he was seeing. I mean, the Lord made two steps and covered the entire universe. I mean, you know, I mean, remember he's standing there, the Lord is there, you know, one foot is on the planet there and another one touching the covering of the universe. I mean, you know, he was not expecting something like that, you know.
Yeah. <It's true>.
You know, and then, where shall I put my third step? See? Like that, really, and then they immediately bonged him up, really. So, you know, it's time to lose your bodily luster, you know?
You're arguing out of shock, out of complete shock.
It is, yeah.
Incidentally, that's why he's, because of those three great steps, that's why he's called Trivikram. Right? Three, the great Kram steps. Thank you for reminding me that. Yeah, this is your pastime, Truth. No?
One other thought was that I believe somewhere I've read that when demigod falls down from his position and has to, then he loses all his bodily luster, and like maybe it was comparable to that.
It's true, when the demigods fall from the heavenly planets back to earth, they lose their bodily luster at the end of their life. Did anybody else have a question or comments? I spaced out. Yeah, so when we fall from an exalted position, it's the shock, and we might lose our bodily luster. But he was so transcendental, he wasn't concerned. He was just ready to satisfy Vamanadeva. And he ended up, by giving up everything, he ended up, he was awarded the kingdom of heaven in the next Manvantara. I think it was. So he could become rightfully the king of heaven. This time he sort of usurped the kingship of heaven, but by the grace of the Lord. And meantime, he could be the ruler of Sutala, which is a very opulent kingdom in the lower planetary system. So he started out having a lot of stolen property, and then it was taken away, and then he was given a lot of property that was rightfully his to rule. So basically the theme is that there's no loss by surrendering to the Lord. We'll actually come out ahead. And although in the immediately it may seem like there's some loss, it won't be in the long run. Does anybody have in their own life any examples they'd like to share about how they thought Krishna had completely taken away everything, but in reality had given him something more? I could think of small things in my life, but not really any good examples. Does anybody have any good examples they want to share with us? Or are we waiting for them to happen? What's that? Yeah, with the Prabhupada, it was after he was 70 that he was given the whole, you know, ISKCON movement with its 100 centers. So. Maybe we're still waiting for it to happen in our case.
Well, one thing I was thinking is, now Srila Prabhupada said that the hippies became happies. So when they became devotees, when the hippies became devotees, Srila Prabhupada called them bright faced. So I guess that has something to do with bodily luster. So on one hand, you know, they're leaving their rich families and, you know, so forth, and all their opulence, and they're becoming devotees. And that's when they actually became bright faced. So just a thought.
It's true that when we joined this movement, we gave up so many things, but we became happier than we were before because we got some transcendental knowledge, realization, and happiness serving Krishna. Somebody have their hand? Okay.
So that wonderful sentence in Srila Prabhupada's purport about the first installation of Krishna's special mercy is that he takes everything away. Yeah. I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about how to prepare for the next installation.
Well, well, the first installation is he takes everything away, and the ultimate, of course, that he is there in the last. Last half of the last sentence, the Lord amply rewards him beyond the expectations of any common man. So then the question is the question about the final installment or the in between the first and the last?
In between.
Well, that's covered in the in-between sentence. A devotee, however, is never disturbed by such loss. He continues his service. So that's that's the test of faith, really. Instead of thinking that this loss we've experienced really is a loss, we think, no, we're going to come out ahead. We just have to keep serving Krishna. We're reading recently in the Nectar of Devotion how Draupadi, so many calamities the Pandavas went through, but she was always thinking, well, at some point we're going to come to an end of these calamities because Krishna is our friend. Someday all this will be over and everything will be nicely situated. And that actually happened. So that's where the test of faith is. Do we actually really believe that this is Krishna who's helping us by taking all this stuff away? Or are we going to give up serving him and think, well, look, what, there's a very... God, I'm sort of out of time, aren't I? There's one story I'll tell you super quickly. I was talking to this devotee, Tatikshu, who does Rathyatras in London. He said some devotees were advertising a festival, and somebody covered over their posters, so they got upset and they ripped down all the posters of the people who covered over their posters, and they put up their posters again, and the people whose posters they ripped off were really upset, and they beat up the devotees. And there was two devotees, one devotee who'd been a devotee for a while and one who was a new bhakta. And the devotee who'd been a devotee for a while, he thought, I've been a devotee of Krishna so long, and I was doing his work, putting up his posters, and he let me get beat up like that. And he actually became faithless. And the new bhakta thought, well, Krishna describes this world as a place that's full of miseries, danger at every step, and here's an example of it. So he became more faithful. So that one incident was taken in different ways due to the faith of the particular people. So we should... We should try to keep the faith and continue with the devotional service. And to do that, we need the association of devotees. So associate with devotees who can give you that faith. And my dear friend Shrikar has to get back to Gainesville by 9:15, so we have to go right now. So thank you so much for your kind attention. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki.